The following is a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, the guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of 640 Toronto.
This is Hi-Fi Radio with Wolfgang Klein and Jack Hardin. Toronto's news, today's talk, 640 Toronto.
Welcome, my friends. Another weekend, another tough slug for investors on all fronts, I must say. Home investors with mortgages are probably asking themselves what is going to happen with their mortgage, either when it comes up for renewal or what the rate will be if it's on a variable fashion. Retirees on a fixed income, obviously some concern. Although I think if you're on a fixed income, an opportunity will be presenting itself to actually give you higher fixed income in some months to come, but certainly volatility and very difficult if you're entering retirement to see markets behave this way. Unfortunately, you really can't time the markets as well as you can time your own retirement date. Jack and I always say you want to enter retirement with more rather than just enough money. More is always better. And if you're a wealth accumulator, friends, this really is a fantastic opportunity to continue on plan, continue to build your assets. And if you have been waiting for an opportunity to step in, certainly what's been presented to you, I think, is pretty darn good. Probably not the bottom. My friends, if you're waiting for the bottom, mark my words, I guarantee you won't hit it. You just got to play around it, invest around it, and set your table accordingly. I bumped into a good friend of mine, employee at Rogers in the sales department, and traditional media. And so I was just asking how business was, and the world of traditional advertising, of course, has been challenged, although resiliently so, but challenged on all fronts. Additional media come into play, new media and the likes, eating traditional marketing dollar for lunch or for breakfast. But they were saying that the online gaming industry has really saved their sales quotas for the year. A huge amount of money going into online betting, wagering, and the likes. You see it on television, you're hearing it on the radio. It's just a remarkable new industry that can allow the governments to bring in additional revenue. Fortunately, we have a great analyst at Canaccord. Jason Tilson is his name, vice president, senior equity analyst. He covers the internet and digital gaming sectors with Canaccord Genuity. Works in Manhattan. So I'm going to say live from Wall Street, Mr. Jason Tilson, welcome to the show, Hi-Fi Radio. It's a delight to bring you on to talk about your coverage universe. Please, let's talk openly about online gaming, you know, amidst the pandemic, coming out of the pandemic, and now in a bit of a rocky economic environment. The space obviously has been challenged. If nothing else, it's from a share price point of view. Can you speak to valuation, speak to what has been taking place and what investors are doing around your space?
Yeah, absolutely. First off, thanks so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here. And you definitely hit on it. It's a super exciting space. It's a really new and exciting market that sort of is opening up here in the U.S. As each state legalizes sports betting. It's obviously an activity that's taken place through illegal channels for many decades, centuries even, and in Las Vegas, legally for many years. But with the Supreme Court's ruling passed in 2018, opened up the online markets on a state-by-state basis here in the U.S. And then more recently, obviously, Ontario became the first province in Canada to legalize sports betting. So there's a lot going on. And to the point that you were just bringing up with valuations, this is a classic example. This is another growth sector with a really large, addressable market that that investors were very much in favor of before and leading into the pandemic. And valuations were very high. I mean, stocks were trading at multiples of 10, 15, 20 times sales as recently as early last year because of the significant growth that's going on in this market. As I said, states legalizing, multiple states legalizing every year, and the market really expanding organic growth within existing markets. And so obviously the whole market, as you were just talking about in your lead-in, has seen this sort of shift of tone from a low interest rate Very growth stocks were very much in vogue, and multiples people weren't so concerned about that. Now we're in an environment where rates are going up, inflationary macro concerns, recession fears, and all of a sudden multiples have compressed significantly. And as a result, growth stocks with cash flows that are more out in the future, such as a DraftKings, which is a stock that we cover, are obviously not in favor right now. And the whole sector has seen multiples compress significantly. A lot of the stocks are down 60, 70, 80%. We still view the space quite favorably, though. We think that there's really significant organic growth here. I think that profits will be coming. Obviously, it's a high cost of acquisition business, sports betting and online casino gaming. But we think that for long-term investors, there's a significant opportunity here to come in and take advantage of those compressed multiples.
Jason, how big is the gambling market? Wagering, lottery tickets, when you put it all together from Vegas to a 649 as we have up here in Canada, how big of an industry are we talking about?
So not inclusive of what you were just referring to, which was lottery. But if you just look at the commercial gambling, the legalized commercial gambling, which includes, you know, slots and table games at casinos, and then the sports betting and online casino, you're looking at an industry that that last year alone, I'm just pulling up, last year did $53 billion in the U.S. And obviously COVID impacted 2020's numbers, but that was a $40 to $44 billion industry pre-COVID. And so you've seen this explosion of sports betting and online casino over recent years as all these states have legalized. That has started to drive renewed growth in the legalized commercial gambling industry in the U.S. And so when people talk about what the opportunity is, you know, just for sports betting here in the U.S., right now, obviously, last year that generated you know, a little over $4 billion of revenue. We're projecting about $7 to $8 billion of revenue this year. And then that's only with 30 to 35% of the U.S. population having exposure to legalized sports betting. So when we think out in the future, when some more of these big states legalize and they get towards closer to half, two-thirds, three-quarters of the U.S. population with exposure to U.S. sports betting, we think that this market from a revenue perspective could be north of $30 billion over time.
And so therefore,
go ahead.
Sorry, Jason. So the numbers up here in Canada, have you taken a look at how much Canadians spend on online gaming and sports betting?
Yeah, so this is a little bit trickier of a market to handicap because historically only parlay cards were available for sports betting through legalized channels. However, there's sort of a gray market existed where the offshore platforms and all kinds of online platforms were allowed to operate. It wasn't technically legal, but they also didn't crack down on that. So there was sort of a thriving gray market that's operated for many years in Canada. Unknown exactly how large that market is, but just extrapolating sort of on a revenue per adult basis, when we look at some of the more mature markets in the world of the United Kingdom or even one of the more mature states in the U.S., such as New Jersey, we get to an implied sort of annual market for Canada of roughly $3 billion for sports betting, maybe a little over $3 billion for sports betting, and a similar sort of opportunity with online casino, another roughly $3 billion, $4 billion. Online casino, so $6, $7 billion for total online gambling. We're looking at maturity once all the provinces have legalized. Ontario itself we see as a more than $1 billion opportunity in annualized gaming revenue, gross gaming revenue, once things are fully up and running and you get a little bit of time under that market.
Go ahead, Jack.
Yeah, no, I just wanted to jump in because you mentioned a term out there that maybe our listeners don't know, especially if they're not in the online gambling or they haven't been exposed to it. Can you maybe go through what parlay gambling is and then also the live in-game betting that we're starting to see now as well? I think that's sort of the higher margin business for these online gaming or gambling sites. And yeah, maybe you can just go through that and how it is being transitioned from the black and gray market into the legal gaming business that's regulated by the government now.
Absolutely. So just a level set there. So obviously, if someone just takes a game, the Blue Jays are playing playing, in a game, and people can just bet on who's going to win the game or how many runs are going to be scored, and just a straight individual bet. Or they can say, oh, I think the Blue Jays are going to win tonight, and the San Francisco Giants are also going to win tonight, and the New York Yankees are also going to win tonight. And if all three of those games win, you're going to get much better odds than just sort of the one-to-one, if you will, if you just take a straight game. You get 5-6-to-1 odds for a wager like that. And so as a result, people like, the lower risk, high reward of parlay bets. And obviously, because you have to have multiple outcomes all succeed in order to win, it's less likely that that's going to happen. And as a result, the house, the casinos, the sports books will win more often than not in those cases. And so parlays, this is a big dynamic that we've seen here in the U.S. So when you look at the market share by operator, certain operators have greater exposure to parlays, just the different product offerings they have, the interfaces, the way that they're doing bonusing and promotions. And parlay wagers, we looked at this in our most recent report, just in Illinois, because Illinois is one of the few states that that puts out operator by operator data for bet types. And what we see is FanDuel, 30% of their total handle, total wagers placed, are on parlays. And of those wagers, they have a 19% win rate, hold rate for parlays. And their non-parlay wagers, the other 70% of the bets they take, have roughly a 5% win rate. So parlays four times more profitable for the house than the individual standard bets. And so they're trying to increase, participation, engagement with that bet type. Live betting, you mentioned, is another huge part of the growth opportunity within sports betting. Mature markets like the UK and in Europe, almost three quarters of total bets placed are live in-game wagers. In the U.S., it's obviously very new. People aren't used to these interfaces. The illegal platforms have very little live wagering. It's just much more of a difficult process from a product standpoint. You need to really invest in those tools and those odds-making tools for live wagering. And as a result, it's more like 20-25% of total betting in the U.S. Over time, that's expected to expand. And that also has a higher hold rate than sort of standard pregame wagers, because people have less time to analyze the markets and figure out where they're going to gain an edge. And so as a result, there sort of is a higher hold rate to the books for live wagering as well. And so those two areas are big drivers of growth for the industry on top of legalization.
Jason Tilson, he's a vice president, senior equity analyst with Canaccord. We're talking digital gaming. We're going to take a quick break, get right back to Hi-Fi Radio Show about money. If you have any questions for Jack or I, WolfgangKlein.com is where you can find us, and we will get back to you ASAP. Quick break, get right back, as I said, to Jason Tilson and talk a little bit more about some of his favorite picks within the digital gaming sector. They've been beaten up. Bet. That's Flintstone. Stand by.
Let's take a break. Wolf and Jack will continue their in-depth discussion about money. You're listening to Hi-Fi Radio on 640 Toronto. You're listening to a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of 640 Toronto.
You got to know when to hold up, know when to fold up, know when to walk away, and know when to run.
You never count your walk away. The kids were playing a little, playing some poker in the basement. A bunch of teenagers. It was hilarious to watch them in my basement with a card table. Goodness gracious. And the one kid, I said, you got to learn to fold. You got to learn to walk away. Keep some of your chips for the next hand. If you got a weak hand, walk away. But even then, if you have a weak stock, more importantly, a weak company and a weak stock, that's right. Those two things put together, get rid of it. You don't need to own it. Good company, weak stock, buy it. I repeat, good company, weak stock, buy it. Invest in it. Stack the probabilities in your favor. And Jack, you always like to say, my friend, if you buy something below average price, expect above average returns over time. Correct?
That's correct, Wolf. As long as it's above average stock in terms of quality.
Quality, quality, quality. It's job one. Jason, one of our analysts at Canaccord, covers the online gaming sector. DraftKings, one of the more populous names, I shall say, about a $5 billion company, has been under significant pressure. I had to cut that one, Jace. I owned it. I couldn't take it anymore. It was just going against me, and I had to cut it. Take my loss, offset that loss against all my other gains I had, and, you know, walk away. I had to walk away from the casino. In this environment, obviously, it must be difficult to attract attention to online gaming. As, you know, higher companies up the food chain are being sold at deep discounted price. I picked up a little Costco the other day. I don't think I'm going to get hurt owning Costco in this environment. Jason, are you a Costco member?
I'm not a Costco member, but I'm a fan of the stores and of the business.
Does your family shop Costco?
Yes. Yes, they do.
Okay. So your family is so your family's a member. You're there. Perfect. Just a little anecdotal market research I'm doing here. let's talk DraftKings. Where do you think this thing is going? How much lower can the stock go? And what's the setup for recovery?
Yeah, so well, when you look at DraftKings, this is a name that you could talk about. It was a stock that was working in that prior market environment. It traded as high as basically 20 times forward revenue. On an EV to sales basis, which is obviously a premium multiple. We look at this, we think of the risk reward here. The stock's well off its highs, about 80% off of the highs. It's trading at less than 2x next year's revenue, which we think is a quite reasonable valuation for a business like this in a very high growth sector that we think is going to continue to grow the top line at greater than 20-30% for several years. That sort of is a conservative basis that doesn't necessarily include aggressive legalization, which we think is possible under certain scenarios. And when you look at DraftKings, you know, this is firmly in second position sort of from a market share basis in the U.S. market. FanDuel was sort of a leading position, 30-40% of share in a given state, depending on the state. The DraftKings usually right there, either in first or in second, with 25-30% share. And this is a business that has a bunch of different things going for it. The first thing, obviously, is this expanding sports betting market, and we see legalization continuing. Three new states, Ohio, Maryland, and Kansas, will be launching around the end of this year. California, which is the largest state by population in the U.S., has two different ballot initiatives to legalize both regular traditional retail sports betting and online sports betting on the upcoming November ballot. Those are seen as sort of a 50-50 shot of passing. And we see this continued trend where state by state, they look at neighboring states, they see lost revenue going to those states, and then they jump on board. Massachusetts has a potential to legalize later this year. So there's a lot of momentum with the market growing. And then, as I said, on top of just new states opening up, you've got live wagering and parlays and all these new bet types driving growth in the industry. So that's one big, big opportunity for DraftKings. Secondly, obviously, it's online casino, which doesn't get talked about as much. It's only legal in six states in the U.S. It's a much slower process that's taking place in the U.S. so far. But we see that as a big opportunity over time because it's a significant crossover between the customer bases for online sports betting and online casino. So it should be much more efficient to acquire those new customers for online casino. And also, the outcomes are much more stable than sports betting. Sports betting, sometimes the house has a great month. Sometimes they have a bad month, depending on the outcomes of games in the football season. The industry saw some adverse outcomes under favorites and overs were hitting at a higher rate than sort of the historical norm. Casino is much more stable and it's a really nice revenue generator for these companies. And so when you layer on a significant online casino market, which many industry experts see as potentially a larger market over time once it reaches sort of legalization parity. Compared to sports betting, that's a massive opportunity. Obviously, you talked about in this market environment, the stock has not worked. That's largely because it's an investment heavily in sales and marketing. They spent almost $1 billion last year in sales and marketing. We expect them to spend about $1.2 billion on sales and marketing this year. However, we think this is sort of the misunderstood part of the story. This is a very upfront, heavy investment that the company is making in each of these individual states. And when they look at the most mature state in the U.S. From an online perspective, New Jersey, which has been around since mid-2018, that state is already contribution profit positive for DraftKings. And so as more states start to mature, that will help offset some of the investments in new states. And we see the total dollars that the company is investing in sales and marketing and promotions sort of peaking over the next year or two, not just as a percent of revenue, but on an absolute dollar basis, and then actually declining over time as the industry matures, which should give a really nice inflection point for the profit margins of this business. And we see really strong profits out in the future, which in this current market environment is not necessarily looked on favorable by investors. But for people who have a long time horizon, we think that this is a really nice risk-reward opportunity that DraftKings at less than 2x next year's revenue.
But in some ways, it almost appears like the opening of the Wild West. A lot of participants, a lot of players, and really it's a bit of a land grab and a race for positioning. And as such, you are seeing my friend from Rogers Media indicated that to me, a real aggressive spend on advertising. So how brand, how much strength do you believe a brand will have in this online universe? And again, if it's online, is brand more or less important relative to a traditional brick and mortar casino?
So it's a great question. I think, it's probably roughly as important online versus in person, maybe slightly more important, only because in their casino environment, in-person casino environment, depending on where you are in the U.S., obviously in your Las Vegas, there's 100 different options, but a lot of other parts of the U.S., there's not as many options for people to go to, so it's more about the local experience and the convenience rather than you're on your phone and there's 5, 6, 7 different options. It's really about which brand resonates with you to which app you're going to go to. And then over time, we see the product offerings and the actual user interfaces really being a differentiating factor. And we see both DraftKings and FanDuel and several other platforms really have a really quality user experience that's going to drive users to those platforms, while some of the others are maybe a little bit more rudimentary and maybe they lose share over time. When you talk about the brand, DraftKings was not historically a casino brand. It was in daily fantasy sports, which was this nascent industry, and they leveraged, just like FanDuel did, their customer base and their brand investments in that game, in that industry, and they leveraged that into sports betting. You've also got some of the traditional casino brands like MGM and Caesars and Penn National with the Barstool Sportsbook. Using their sort of existing brands in the space. And we've seen on the online casino front, a company like MGM outperform from a market share standpoint compared to their sports betting share, because consumers that they think of casino and gambling like that, when they think of MGM. So we see brands being very important. Obviously, the investments in TV advertising are really important. We saw Caesars jump out to the leading position in New York in the first month, because they had really invested heavily during the football season in their commercials. I'm sure anyone who watched their NFL game last year in the U.S. and even I'm sure some in Canada saw those commercials, and that was very effective. And they actually announced earlier this year they were going to cut almost all of their planned TV spend going forward because they achieved their goal of creating awareness of their sports betting offering in the marketplace. And their share, when you see that pullback, their share, it was obviously very promotional as well. They offered one of the biggest sign-up bonuses of all operators in New York, but their share has receded significantly over subsequent months, which shows the power of those marketing dollars up front, but also that you have to have a really strong user experience in order to keep customers on your platform. And we also see the potential for advertising restrictions over time. You mentioned how, you turn on a game and you're bombarded with these ads. We've seen some states proposed restrictions on the types of audience or the frequency and the types of advertising. So that's obviously going to be something to watch going forward is how regulators allow the volume and the types of advertising for both sports betting and casino gambling.
In interest of time, Jason, you've got about 60 seconds here. Give us your top pick for a true blue chip investor, someone with a 3 to 5 year time horizon.
So for a long-term investor, given where current valuations are, we think that of the public market options, DraftKings is our favorite at basically 1.5 times next year's revenue. Again, not inclusive of additional states that potentially could launch. So that multiple could even come down further should estimates go up. And we think that this is a business that this is not a winner take all industry. This is an industry that will have multiple players that will succeed. And we think that DraftKings has built a brand that is made to last in this industry, particularly once we get that full online casino offering layered in as well. Another way to play this space is Sportradar, ticker SRAD. This is a provider of the data from sports that goes to the sportsbook operators for them to create live odds, to create all that information. So it's more of a business-to-business play, a picks and shovels way to play the sports betting theme. That company has a lot of recurring revenues, significant subscription exposure, as a percent of their total revenue. And that's a global business. They don't just serve the U.S. operators. They serve all the operators around the world. And that's another stock that's trading at about 2-3 times next year's revenue. So with a high recurring base of revenue there, we think that that's also an attractive valuation and a little bit less not risky, but a little bit of a different mindset. Picks and shovels B2B versus that heavy marketing investment in the B2C. That's a profitable business as well, Sportradar.
That sounds like a very interesting idea, Jason. Again, the selling of data certainly is a theme. I'm, as you mentioned that idea, I was just thinking about Moody's or MSCI. Again, all in the business of collecting and selling data. Low capex required, recurring cash flow, recurring revenue. Moats get created that way. Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant. Have to take a look at that name. Jason Tilton, one of our key vice presidents, senior equity analyst with Canaccord. He covers the internet and digital gaming sector. If you have any questions on the sector, Jack and I have access to a brilliant white pages that Jason recently penned. Quite brilliant. Jack's been digging through it and been quite impressed with some of the numbers. We're going to take a quick break and get back to Wall Street with none other than Mr. Tony Dwyer, frequently seen on CNBC, Jack and I's personal strategist, available for our clients, our exclusive members of the Wolf on Bay Street. It's going to be a great hit. Stay tuned.
Don't go anywhere. There's more Hi-Fi Radio in a moment on 640 Toronto. You're listening to a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of 640 Toronto.
New York, New York. I want to wake up in a city that doesn't sleep. And find I'm king of the hill, top of the heap.
That's Tony Dwyer, my friends. Indeed, king of the hill, top of the heap. Until it's a bear market. Well, indeed, that's where we're in, my friends. We're in a bear market. And, Tony Dwyer helps Jack and I out a lot navigating tumultuous times, which do end. And everything in life is temporary. Everything in life is temporary. High prices and low prices. But ultimately, fair value over the long term seems to reign true. And, you know, Tony, it was interesting when Jack and I first met you, and I haven't heard your lines recently, but your fundamental core thesis for why stocks go up and or down. And why don't we maybe review, take you right back to day one of investing, is why do stocks go up, Tony Dwyer?
Well, thanks for having me, Wolfie. As you know, over the 35 years I've been doing this, I've made a lot of mistakes just like everybody else. And through those mistakes, I found that these five market realities are not questionable to me. I've learned it the hard way. Number one, the market correlates with the direction of earnings. So as long as the direction of earnings is going up, the market can go up, and obviously the vice versa. The direction of earnings is driven by economic activity. Economic activity is driven by the availability of money, and availability of money is driven by the Fed or global central banks. and that's driven by inflation. So obviously we've had an inflation problem from the beginning of the year, which has dictated a more cautious stance from us than we traditionally are in.
Right. So earnings are going to continue to rise this year, according to Wall Street estimates. And in fact, they're slated to rise again next year. Year-over-year earnings are going to continue to grow. Correct, Tony?
I think that's incorrect, Wolfie. I think earnings are going to be generally up this year. But between the second half of this year and into early next year, they may be a little bit more difficult if we trend toward a recession. So it's more flat than up or down. So with the market down 20%, we're mostly neutral, looking to see what the direction from money availability is going to be. It's all about whether households or businesses have the access to money. And that can come from a bank, it can come from your earnings, and it can come from the markets. And right now, all of those are a little bit dicey.
Where do we go from here, Tony? The market is already down, call it 22%. The NASDAQ's down over 30. How much lower can the market go? And when do you think the central bank does its proverbial pivot? And friends at home, Wall Street's been talking about a pivot. Jack's been talking about a pivot. What a pivot is when the central bank that's raising interest rates tonight right now then tells the market, okay, job is done. We can now take it easy for a little while. That will be a change of policy stance and therefore a pivot in policy. That seems to be what everyone is waiting for. So, Tony, what's your sense? When do we get that? But how much damage can be done, or more pain do we have to endure between now and then? Two-pronged question.
Well, so the first thing that I want to reinforce, Wolfie and Jack, are two things that you guys frequently mention. When you look back at all the historic declines in the market, whether they're 20% or 50%, when the market made a new high in January, that meant that none of those declines should have ever been sold. Right. If you're at a new all-time high, it obviously got back any of those declines. So, you know, the right framework is historically, unless you need the money, there's no reason to really play too much in terms of the timing of it. From the standpoint of where can it go, it's going to depend on earnings. And right now, the Fed, I think the global central banks are making policy mistakes by getting overly tight on data that typically lags. And for the general listener, that just means that they're using data that's already behind us. The forward-looking data is showing lesser inflation, but they're focused on the headline number. So, you know, as long as that's the case, you could certainly go lower.
Again, when you're speaking about lagging data, Jack, and I want to hear what you have to say here on this one too, back, Jack. But in terms of lagging data that they're looking at, Tony, you're speaking about employment, you're speaking about inflation data, correct? That's all backward
looking. Yeah, I'm talking about housing prices. Owner's equivalent rent is part of the consumer price index. It's an overweight part of the consumer price index, and that it takes a long time for that to turn. So there's signs in the U.S. that the economy is already slowing sharply, yet the Fed is about to raise 75 to 100 basis points at the end of this month based on data that shows that inflation was strong. So it's one of those times where, you know, people look to the Fed guys like they know all. It's like they know everything and they're always right. So let's listen to what they say. I've yet to see them get it right. You know, they just made the mistake that's creating the problem we're in. And we're looking to that group to fit for the solution, which is dicey.
I'd say, Tony, I know you like to look at history, so I just wanted to talk about history. With a slowing economy that you referenced there, we all know that things are slowing down or decelerating, and aggressively raising interest rates with global central banks. Can you look back in a period of time that you've seen this, and then what was the overall outcome, short and long term?
Not really, no. So we did a study and we looked for times that the S&P 500 had as severe a decline as we had seen in June. In other words, the 10-week rate of change. So how the market moved in the last 10 weeks, it got to down 15% at the June low. And then it pivoted. It got a little bit better recently, right up until last Friday. So we found the 16 times that that's happened to that degree, to the same degree since 1950. It never proved to be the low. It went straight up and never looked back like we did in 2020. And out of those 16 times, there were six periods where you never looked back, kept ripping higher. And that all six of those, the Fed had already started easing. So obviously that's not the case here. So that means it's just a temporary, we're looking for a temporary summer rally. We're already in the middle of it. So we're going to have a little bit more, and then I'm afraid we're going to have to go back to the low.
And just you referenced a policy mistake that central banks are making as well, Tony. So what indications are you seeing that are telling you that? Maybe something that's forward-looking that's saying that the Fed has gone too far. Is it like the euro-dollar futures curve, inflation break-even, yield curve?
Yep. All of that, Jack. I mean, you're on top of this stuff. It's all of that, especially the yield curve. Now the two-year to 10-year yield curve is severely inverted, meaning short-term interest rates are higher than long-term interest rates. And for the listeners, that means if a bank's getting their money at 1% or at 3%, let's say a bank gets their money at 3%, they wouldn't lend it to lose money at 2%. Right, they wouldn't pay 3% for the money and then lend it to us at 2%. They would lose a percent. So when you invert the yield curve, it shuts down bank lending.
Right. So the fact that the market forces, the people that are actually betting with dollars, whether it's euro dollar futures or inflation break even, whatever it is, or in the fixed income market, the market is already saying that central banks have gone too far. So in that case, you would expect, I'm not going to say a pivot is going to happen immediately because I just don't expect it to happen based on what's going on with inflation and central bankers looking backwards. But it tells us that, you know, you can at least see a positive catalyst in the, I'm going to say, 6 to 12 months future when central banks have to make that pivot of going from raising rates to potentially lowering rates or at least going on pause.
Yeah. And the unfortunate part of that is that usually that pivot comes with one thing, pain.
Tony Dwyer. I have not heard you so sanguine in such a long time, my good friend, I must say. We're going to take a quick break, get right back to our chief strategist at Canaccord, along with my partner, Jack Hartle. Shows Hi-Fi Radio each and every Saturday night on 640 in Toronto from 7 to 8 p.m. Yes, it's a show about money. We want you to have lots of it. If you own it right now, Tony's advice is hang on, which I agree with. Just leave it alone if you own it. If you don't own it, if it's borrowed, and you're going to be squeezed in here. And my friends, don't meet a margin call. That's what they say on Wall Street. Never meet a margin call. If the margin clerk calls you, sell and move on. I think we're great. Right back to Tony Dwyer and Jack Hartle on Hi-Fi Radio. Stay tuned.
Want to make more money? Stay tuned for more Hi-Fi Radio on 640 Toronto.
You're listening to a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of 640 Toronto.
Well, now I need a little give and take. The New York Times, the Daily News. It comes down to reality, and it's fine with me, 'cause I've let it slide. I don't care if it's Chinatown or rotten Riverside. I don't have any reason left them all behind. I'm in a New York state of mind.
As am I, my friend. We got Tony Dwyer on the line, our chief strategist, live from New York. What a treat, indeed. You know, Tony's very, very good, and he calls it as he sees it. And, well, Tony is obviously concerned, as is the market. When I say the market, I'm talking about the stock market. The bond market, I want to go back to it, Tony. The bond market led the inflation data. The bond market led the central bank policy change to raising interest rates as the 10-year was climbing rapidly this year, getting well above 3%. And that told us that we got issues coming, and sure enough, they came. But the bond market has since, the 10-year yield has now fallen back below 3% this week. What is that telling you, Tony? Yes, you speak about them inverting the yield curve, but is that telling you inflation is getting contained and that the central banks perhaps next year or the year after will in fact have room then to lower interest rates?
Yep, that's exactly what it means. And it's a follow-on point that Jack made earlier, Wolf, is that, you know, the euro-dollar curve, all those things that none of us really understand that well, that price and the probability of rate hikes or rate cuts, they're all suggesting rate cuts in 2023. So it seems a little nuts to me that we're going to do a 75 or 100 basis point hike into the teeth of a market that's already beginning to look for rate cuts early next year. And that's the policy mistake that I'm talking to. And you know, if I were a listener, I'd say, this guy's a wise guy. He thinks he knows more than the Fed. Well, the reality is the market knows more than the Fed because it's been leading the Fed. So it's not my personal view. It's what the conglomeration of a lot smarter people than me are saying. And they're saying that the Fed tightening or the global central bank tightening is going to cause enough economic weakness to warrant a rate cut. So in our view, the stock market is reflecting an economic softening, but not necessarily an economic recession.
Tony, how deep do you think this recession will go? And I've asked a question because I want to just myth bust a few concerns about, you know, the word depression. Every now and then when you get into a bear market, is this the next depression? Do you want to speak to that point, Tony?
Well, how bad the economy gets is going to be dependent upon how quickly the Fed does Jack's pivot. And if they pivot quickly, it can be a moderate recession. But the idea that you can raise rates to a historic, and remember, the sharpness of the rate rise is what we're talking about here. Obviously, interest rates have been way higher before. But if you're in a mortgage, it went from 3% to 5.25% on a 30-year fixed mortgage in a month and a half. To the point where Neil Kashkari, who was the head of the Minneapolis Fed, literally stated that the Fed withdrew accommodation faster than they gave it in the pandemic. And think about the speed of that. So the point is that the depth of the recession will fully depend upon how quickly the Fed makes money more readily available. But ultimately, you cannot raise rates the way they have into a leveraged system with growing inventories and slackening demand and think you're going to have a soft landing.
You know, the last time I heard of a policy error that really stood out was when your former president, Donald Trump, was yelling at the Fed for raising interest rates too quickly. He, of course, wants to continue to stimulate the economy, and the central bank was being a little hawkish at that point. But he seemed to get his way. The Fed, I think, listened to the Donald Trump and stopped raising interest rates.
No, he didn't listen to Donald Trump. They didn't listen to Donald Trump. They listened to the market. We were in the midst of the Christmas Eve massacre, if you remember that, where the market was getting absolutely annihilated, and signs were there of an economic slowdown. The Fed had been expecting, at the end of December, in the middle part of December at the Fed meeting, their dot plot showed at least two more rate hikes, and they ended up easing in the next move. So the idea that they weren't listening to Donald Trump, they were listening to market forces.
Well, I hope they listen to you, Tony. Please continue to use that megaphone and get the message out there of policy error. The moral consequences could be quite severe. Tony Dwyer, Chief Market Strategist, Canaccord, live from Wall Street, an absolute delight. My friend, I want to wish you a great weekend. It's a real pleasure and honor to spend time with you on this show. Jack, great job.
You too, as well.
And friends at home, please, any questions about money, if your guy isn't communicating with you, perhaps, call us. We'll communicate with you anytime. WolfgangKlein.com is where we can be found. Be safe. Be prosperous. We'll speak with you next weekend. Same bad time, same bad channel. 640 Toronto.
You've been listening to Hi-Fi Radio with Wolfgang Klein and Jack Harthill, portfolio managers at Canaccord Genuity Wealth Management. For questions about today's show or any questions about money, email Wolf and Jack at wolfgangklein.com. Hi-Fi Radio, for the love of money. Join us again next week.
The preceding was a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, the guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of 640 Toronto.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink. All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone, like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.